I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Welcome, listeners, to another Damn Fine Espresso. I'm joined here this morning to talk about two new films by Alan. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
And these two films are actually connected in different ways and yet very different from each other as well. We're talking about the new adaptation of Wuthering Heights by Emerald Fennell, on the one hand, and the new, I'm not going to say adaptation, but quasi-sequel to Frankenstein called The Bride! By Maggie Gyllenhaal. Both female authors that were adapted by female directors, both 19th century source material that has been adapted or had been adapted multiple times in various forms. So we saw these new versions and you're going to get our fresh take on them. So Alan, which movie did you see first? What were expectations and what were reactions?
I think the first one I saw was Wuthering Heights, and I had a sort of slightly perverse expectation because the trailer came out and everyone was hating on it. There was a very negative reaction on social media to the extent that it made me more excited to see the film, because people's like pontificating about trailers and they go, oh, they've got all this wrong. Oh, this is too overdone. This is too overblown. It kind of made me really more curious to see the film. I think if it hadn't been such a strong reaction, I would have been less bothered about seeing it. And also, I think they soundtrack, they released the song with John Cale doing, you know, a sort of spoken vocal, which I thought was absolutely fabulous. So I thought of those two things got me more excited than I thought for Wuthering Heights. So yeah, I saw it very soon after it came out.
It was kind of dissimilar for me because I had seen the opera Wuthering Heights by Bernard Herrmann, which is one of my favorite, you know, works by his. And obviously I'd read the novel, which I always thought was a bit of a mess. And I never found it to be quite as riveting as, you know, Jane Eyre or Frankenstein. So always had issues with Wuthering Heights. So I was very interested in how Emerald Fennell, obviously with the trailer coming out, seeing the vision that she put up on screen very early on and her previous films like Saltburn and Promising Young Woman that I'd seen. So I was excited, but also a bit skeptical because I thought, well, Wuthering Heights is a bit of a mess, and I'm very curious to see what this fresh adaptation will do to it, especially with that, it seemed, very interesting take on at least an aesthetic level. So, well, what did you end up feeling once you saw the film or once you sat in the middle of it?
Well, I think, like you, I think a big caveat to everything I say is I don't really like the book. I think partly it was we had to study it at school. It was one of the book texts then, which is a good way of smashing out any joy you can have from a book if it's taught badly. And I remember really not liking it. And I liked other books, so it wasn't entirely the teaching. I really sort of struggled with it. And I think I've reread it since, and I liked it more, but I agree with you, it's a mess. And as a result, I've got no emotional attachment to it. So I read someone saying, oh, I'm going to make this adaptation, and I'm going to change all this stuff. My attitude is like, yeah, fill your boots. This is like exactly do it with an adaptation. I'm not attached to the source material. And I know people who are, and I think reading their criticisms of the film, they make sense. I think if I was attached to Wuthering Heights, I would sort of really dislike this film. So I still don't really like this film, but it's not for the changes. I actually like a lot of what they do to change it, I'm sort of down with. And I really think if you make an adaptation, take big swings, take ambitious gambles. But I think ultimately, it just, apart from the amazing sort of visual look of it, which I thought was incredible, it's this amazing look with characters that just don't seem anything sort of moving inside it. And I just sort of wanted more. I wanted characters that fitted the environment and not characters that seemed very uninteresting and unengaging. I think that was my sort of first, yeah, that was my key thing. How about you? How did you feel about it?
Well, I was kind of disappointed. And the only change I was really disappointed by was the entire layer of the ghost story and the flashback that is so central to my memory of all the versions I had seen or heard. So I thought that the fact that this was gone was kind of a bummer. I was kind of waiting for it. And I thought, especially when the movie ended, this would have been, I think, an interesting addition to then go into this like supernatural sphere. It was very like bare-boned like cut down to the central love story and tribulations. And that, yeah, I wasn't particularly interested in seeing. I think I was also enjoying it on the visual level. I thought the anachronistic score was at least interesting, the way that these songs were thrown in, these very fresh songs were thrown in. And I liked some of the supporting characters, especially like Kathy's father and Isabella. The ward that comes up later on the neighboring mansion to Wuthering Heights. I think that was, those characters were well played. There was a bit of like almost comic relief from at least Isabella. She seemed to be an interesting interpretation of that character, because she's seen as this, you know, subordinate to Heathcliff's whims to some, but then is she really empowered by, you know, giving in to her own personal desires and fulfilling them with the help of Heathcliff? So there's an interesting theme running through the film of like, what is desire and what is control, which I thought was interestingly realized. But I think casting was a bit of a problem. I think seeing Margot Robbie in the role of Kathy really threw me out almost each time I saw her. She's become very much, obviously not just through her role as Barbie, but I think also in other films that I've recently seen her in, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood included. She's just this Hollywood face now to me. She's a good actress, but I think seeing her and then Jacob Elordi, who I'd also seen in various films recently, it just threw me out. It was seeing like a, almost like a 40s, 50s Hollywood film that was made for the likes of, you know, Betty Davis and Cary Grant, and you were kind of marveling yeah. at them, but then it's not quite the same league of actors, sorry to say. So I was never really invested in that casting of those characters.
I think that's a good point, because it's when they used to do this with the films that last from the Golden Age, they would do this, but they would absolutely roll with what was charming about them. Yeah, you'd get Cary Grant into it. You would make the role a Cary Grant role. And instead, what they've done here is they still kept the characters as sort of petulant teenagers.
Yep.
But they don't look like petulant teenagers. Like I said, they look like movie stars. And so you have movie stars behaving petulantly. And, well, that's just annoying movie stars. That's like divas and so on. It takes away, I think, a level of empathy you can get from the book by thinking, oh, they're just kids. They don't know any better. Of course they're going to be extremely emotional. They're going to have strops over this. They're going to overreact, because they're basically kids. But when you're seeing two very grown-up movie stars behave in the same way, the association is probably with, yeah, like a very sort of diva-ish behavior. And I definitely agree with you, like the ghost thing feels like a huge absence, especially given how this is shot. Like the sort of visual, everything sort of dialed up to 11 to some extent. And you kind of could have inserted like horror elements in that. No problem. It wouldn't have felt jarring. I think sometimes adaptations are a bit coy about the ghost element because, you know, this is a literary novel. We're not telling a horror story. Whereas I think this is an adaptation could have really like rolled into that. And it felt mood. It felt the way it looked. And its complete absence feels like very weird. Why didn't they sort of go with that?
Yeah, totally. I think the artifice of the sets would have played especially well into this, where you were hyper aware that this wasn't a real landscape. These weren't real places. And I think there you could have really taken this to the next level as well. To your point about the children, I think the part that worked best was actually when they were children, right? When, among others, Owen Cooper from Adolescence was playing young Heathcliff. And he was excellent. And I think his counterpart as young Kathy as well. I think there, obviously, you saw the pains of growing up and the trauma that they experienced and the proximity that grew between them. And I think once that switches, once you have Margot Robbie's face come in, it's like, oh, it's Margot Robbie. And then the spell is broken. I think she tries well, but I think I would have been really interested in seeing maybe an unknown face or a lesser known actress and actor in that same interpretation. I think it could have been really much more interesting. And also, you know, look at the poster from the film, these two faces. I'm not sure if you've like seen it often, but it's very like Gone of the Windy, classic Hollywood. It looks like posters from other Wuthering Heights adaptation. He looks more like Timothy Dalton than himself in that picture. So they really went for something else that they're not. And I think it's a bit to the detriment of their interpretation, and yeah, there's maybe also their star power. They don't really get to develop that themselves. It's kind of a mashup of the characters and expectations of classic Hollywood.
I think that sort of notion of like what they're going for, it doesn't quite land. I think that was really when I left that I had all this sort of, couldn't put my finger on what I was sort of annoyed by, what didn't really work. And I'm quite indebted, a friend to me said it was like a TikTok video from someone called Louis that it put it perfectly. So I have to credit them because that what they said suddenly made sense of all my thoughts. And it basically highlighted, so there's the visual of the bedroom that Kathy gets when she married. So she moves to the new house and the guy has made this bedroom. And the walls of the bedroom are her skin, right down to the mole, which is an incredible visual. But at no point do I think the guy she's married is the sort of man who would do that. You want a character who would be super obsessive and weird. Someone who would say, I've now wallpapered a bedroom that it looks like your skin, right down to blemishes. Or maybe you wanted her to say, this is my bedroom, I can do what I want, I want it to be my... You know, there's no reason from the characters for it to be there. And what this film lacks is taking the characters to the same level as the landscape of the visuals, to make them more over the top, that fitted where they were. And this sort of video made this point, and I think that is sort of across the board, the sort of general failing, that I love the over the top elements of it. But then when the characters don't quite match, the characters, they almost have to be nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the things I did like about it was the sort of recasting of what's an abusive relationship in the book as possibly slightly consensual BDSM relationship. That's quite interesting. That's an interesting new take. But then it doesn't really do anything with it. And you just sort of want it, go all in. Like if this is the approach you want to take, take the characters there, take the whole story there and then visualize it, tell ghosts, throw all that in the mix. And instead, it's the characters are sort of, yeah, they're just weirdly empty compared to the story and the landscape and almost the ambition of the storytelling. It just isn't there. And they wander through it like empty figures, really.
I think, however, that the character of Isabella Linton was the only one that realized that fully. I think there, you see her obsession early on, you see her like peculiar interests, not only in Heathcliff, but also in their story and her dollhouse and, you know, the obsession that grows. I think if they had gone for more of this type of reinterpretation and exaggeration of the source material, I think the heightened visuals would have made more sense. But then again, I guess the star casting and this like framing of Wuthering Heights as basically a tragic love story with a death at the end and then that's it. I thought it was such a shame. I was just getting into the film by the end and then it ended. And I thought, oh, what a shame. I mean, now you'd have to go for this, you know, pack these weird layers of how Kathy is going to haunt Heathcliff onto it because they had the locations, they had the mood. I think they'd the visuals, obviously, they would have been able to do it. But it was kind of up to Isabella to get us an insight into, I think, also Emerald Fennell's vision and interesting ideas that she had about it, but then maybe got watered down or cut or whatever they did in the process. Or maybe an overfocus of saying, okay, let's cut away the maybe messy bits of the novel and just focus on childhood and grown-up state. But it felt like, oh, I'm going to do a ghost sequel to this because they're missing like large parts of the story. I mean, just to think of the opera. I mean, obviously Herman is very, you know, like a yearning romantic. So the opera starts with this large prologue that is just about the wind howling through Wuthering Heights and Kathy outside the window wanting to be let in. And that's an entire part at the beginning, at the end. You can't just leave that away and not mention it. So this felt like chopped to bits.
Yeah, there's something sort of weird if you go down the route of, you know, this is Gone with the Wind, this is the great romance, which I think adaptations, you know, I can understand why they do. And they sort of, they leave out chunks of the book to focus on Kathy and Heathcliff. But I think if you're trying to sell them the big romance, then the ghost story, and especially the end, the idea that the two of them as ghosts now wander the moors, why would you pass up on that visual? Why would you not want that in the film? It sort of caps like the sort of absolutely grand tale, over-the-top tale that you want to tell. And I think it is interesting with Wuthering Heights that you have these different directions you can take. I think one angle I find quite interesting, and I think it's a valid criticism, is the sort of race angle, that you've got Heathcliff, who's played by sort of a white actor in this, and in the book there's hints that he's not. And I always found that quite problematic in the book. I think the book itself is actually, I'm not sure about it there, that how it's handled. It seems to me a little bit, yeah, he's a little bit foreign. We won't define it, but that's why he's exotic and overly passionate and temperamental.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think if you adapt it, and if you're going to make him non-white, embrace it and tell a story that takes that seriously. So I can kind of understand why you avoid it. Whereas conversely, I think there is a good version of Wuthering Heights that would embrace it and really change and fix it. And I think the cardinal sin of this is, like you said, it's taken a decision and somehow it's now been watered down. And that's the flaw of the film. They sort of, this is the direction they want to go in, and then it kind of just doesn't do it. And in the end, it just feels like a shrug of a film.
It does. And I think also from the angle, maybe the final angle, that was also either lauded or criticized, because I was there with an audience who was obviously enthralled seeing it. It was a relatively young audience that I think went to see it for different reasons. I think it was the sparkling eroticism between the two leads. And I think this, a stretch in the film that is kind of based around them, you know, meeting in secret and passionately consuming their love. And I thought it also doesn't really fulfill that angle, right? Where you say, okay, let's take this classic love story and let's really show the passion and, the attraction to each other. And I think the chemistry also didn't quite work. And that didn't, I mean, there were these sequences that seemed quite open and, you know, let's finally put this 19th century novel into the right terms of what was meant on the page. But then it also doesn't fulfill that promise. So maybe it's a little bit that it was at a lot of avenues that could have been realized. Well, but maybe that gives us a perfect segue to also talk about the other film and see if that has been fully realized in its vision, because I think Maggie Gyllenhaal's The Bride, which I don't know how we want to put this. Is it like a free interpretation of The Bride of Frankenstein or James Whale? Or is it a sequel to Frankenstein that could have been? It's Mary Shelley talking from the grave, apparently, the beginning of the film. And then it goes some weird and unexpected way. So what were expectations that you had about The Bride going in based on trailers and previews?
I mean, I saw the trailer, and I do a thing now with a lot of films that if I like the trailer, I'm not going to read anything about it. I like going in to see a film with as little information as possible, to the extent that I will avoid reviews as well, because reviews spoil too much. So I saw the trailer, I enjoyed the trailer. I liked what seemed to be like the concept of it, that it's sort of like this sort of over-the-top retelling, or just really taking the concept of a bride for Frankenstein and then starting from scratch with it, really running with like, okay, let's tell our own story with this. So I really sort of enjoyed the trailer. I thought, no, I'm definitely for seeing this. Was it similar for you? What sort of made you keen to see it?
It was also the trailer. I thought it was like, it was powerful. It was weird. It was edgy. I had just seen Jesse Buckley in Hamnet, and this one seemed so like a different wheelhouse. And the cast, Christian Bale in it and Jake Gyllenhaal. I just thought, oh, wow, this looks interesting and very electrifying, to use that word already, right? It seemed, I just wanted to see it. It was like, it looked highly original. I was wondering if the trailer would, or the film would actually live up to what you saw in the trailer, because it was such a on-point summary of what supposedly was the film. And so that's always the question: is it going to be deflated, or are they going to just show the highlights, and will the film work out as well? And yeah, what did you think of how this concept was realized in the film itself?
I think this is a film that falls in the category of one that I will admire more than love. I did watch there, and like the trailer had promised big ambitious moments. And I got that, and I did enjoy them. I did enjoy when it really embraced size, scale. Like the opening narrative is Mary Shelley dead, saying, oh, I've got one more idea for a story. And then sort of creating the story in the real world. I mean, this is sort of like, I did not see this coming. But I never turned from admiring any of this to really loving it. I never at any point felt, oh my God, this is like an absolute classic of a film. It sort of falls into the category of like, I'm really glad they made this film because it is ambitious. There was stuff I really liked about it, but it just didn't quite click together to be a great film. for me.
No, I get it. I was feeling the same, or actually also not feeling much while watching it. Again, admiring the over-the-top moments. I thought a lot of like original stuff was like put into this and then thrown together and put into the mix, into not the blender, that would be too cruel. I think that there were very, very interesting parts and set pieces. But I think at times it went a little bit into the too moody, too weird, and too unrelatable. I think with both, I probably related to Frankenstein Christian Bale more than to Jessie Buckley's The Bride. I mean, she's very anarchic and very crude and cartoonish. And I think him, he almost seems tame, like beside her. Like he's more struggling to control what happens with her. So I think that was an interesting dynamic, The Bride, that he ended up getting. And I really enjoyed also a lot of the supporting players, Annette Bening and her weird maid, Greta. I think they were very off their time, yet put into the 1930s version that this was. There was a lot of elements that I thought were great and fun. I laughed, I admired. But yeah, it doesn't come together as something that moves you in any way, right? For the people who create, for the creatures, or for the consequences that they have on others or on themselves. So I think I was left a little bit like, you know, kind of cheering it, because it had been, I think, a fully realized film as opposed to Wuthering Heights, where I felt, yeah, I like that concept and the brashness with that they went with here more. But yeah, I kind of was left puzzling at the end if that was really a movie that I loved. Probably also not really.
I think the meanest thing I can say, and I do feel mean saying it, is the biggest flaw, I think, with this film is that when Jessie Buckley is playing the bride, when she's meant to be at her most anarchic, I never bought it. And I think what that role required, if you have a character that's like switching voices, that seems so completely unpredictable, there has to be an element of danger that you can feel watching it. They have to convey that this character is genuinely dangerous. There is a madness here that feels real, and the, you know, the story, and you as the audience, you'll never quite get the handle on it because it's so unpredictable and wild. And I never got that from her. I always felt like this is a very good actress now going sort of very actorly over the top. It's someone who's an actor saying, I can do these voices, I'll switch between voices, or I'll say some rude words. But at no point did I feel that there was a character underneath it that was a dangerous individual because of all these qualities. And I think that sort of translates into the general criticism of the film. It's not a bad performance, but it lacks something that would make me think this is a really dangerous character in this world. And that the film, I think, the film needs that to become alive. That's the spark it needs. And it's not quite there. And you're sort of watching it, and there's so many sort of good ideas that sort of presented. But I found myself sitting there thinking like, oh, that's a good idea. Sort of nodding sagely, but not sort of like cheering. Like the whole idea that she inspires some sort of rebellion, some sort of like women adopting the look of her. That's like a really good idea. But at no point did it really land as something that felt dramatically hugely satisfying, that we were in a world where this horrible thing was happening and then these people were inspired to do this and there was no emotion to that story. We were just kind of told, and you know, told, this is what happened next, this is what the women are doing. And we got the final scene, the sort of mid-credit scene where you realize the bad guy has sort of been taken down. I wanted that in the film. You almost want the bride to take him down in a horrible over the top way. It just sort of this is what I sort of wanted to see. And also I think part of it is the idea that the bride is maybe not meant for Frankenstein, which I liked as well, where they sort of said she's not. I'm not the bride of Frankenstein. I'm the bride. And then it sort of ends with them holding hands. And it felt sort of confused. Well, are they meant to be together? Because I would almost prefer it if the end was her saying to Frankenstein, sorry, but no. And you're going to have to go off and yeah, you'll be lonely. You'll have to find another solution. You can't make me your solution. Whereas at the end, it's kind of like, no, they do love each other. He was right to make this person And I wanted sort of that sort of towards the end. I wanted a big showdown with a bad guy. I wanted to be dramatically leading to this rebellion. And I wanted her to not be holding hands with Frankenstein. I mean, this is the fatal flaw of like maybe judging a film for what it isn't rather than what it is. But I did feel disappointed by that. And I think it just comes back to like, it's making these big swings. I admire them. And that's my sort of feeling of the film.
Yeah, you have to admire it for that, for this boldness and the number of concepts that were tried out and touched upon. And probably also relatively not fully realized, but realized probably to a higher degree than, you know, maybe directed by somebody else. Maybe, you know, had it been written that way and then put in front of a different director and a different team, it might have been less realized. But I think it gets stuck in that, on that conceptual level. Like you said, for instance, for me, the most interesting part was also this female empowerment theme, obviously running through it, both by creating her backstory where she had been bullied and eventually killed by these mafia people. And then, yeah, this mob lurking in Chicago, obviously. And yeah, the expectation that she's going to go against them and that the women that she empowers and that start to realize their own subordinate roles would somehow take up the pitchforks and go against these men. And I think all the moments where this, like, these enlightenments happened thanks to her, I think that was really what I think was also the heart of what Gyllenhaal was going for, and I think what was her interest in that. But then, yeah, it's not realized to its full potential, like you said, in terms of the plot, but also in terms of the thematic red thread going through it that could have led to that point, that would have really made this bride exclamation mark her own thing, maybe even venturing into the future and changing history, you know, this alternative history perspective that was in there.
And you've got the thing at the beginning where you have like a dead Mary Shelley sort of saying, I've got one more story. And her voice is very much a voice that then the bride switches to at times, a sort of very angry voice. And I sort of love that in terms of Mary Shelley sort of looking on from the dead saying, there's so much more I could have done. That's really exciting. But then she disappears from the story. She's not involved in the end. She doesn't sort of come back. There isn't an ending that fits the beginning. That, like, Mary Shelley has this story to tell that kind of then becomes entwined with possibly the real world as she possesses someone. Like, that, I would have loved something that sort of ended that as well. Like, you know, Mary Shelley comes back from beyond the grave. And again, but I absolutely loved the beginning, the opening of the film, and just that's so striking, and I didn't see it coming. And I feel like I'm criticizing it because it didn't do it more at the end of the film, which is sort of glass half empty when I should be stressing the glass half full. That opening's incredible. I love that opening, that how it just plays with this idea of what we're going to see and then referencing Mary Shelley as like a pioneer, inventor almost of science fiction, that she's never got her due and that she might be sort of a bit angry about that. That whole aspect to her was just brilliant. And those moments that are the reason why I would say, you know, I'd recommend the film. There's enough of that to make it worth watching.
I just wanted to ask you, you know, if you had to choose between those two, which one you would recommend. But I think it's an interesting point you make, which is also kind of a parallel between both Wuthering Heights and The Bride, is that we said that the ghost aspect actually wasn't fully realized, right? They cut it from Wuthering Heights and they cut it from The Bride too by not giving Mary Shelley's ghost her proper due. But it sounds like you would recommend The Bride quite a bit more than Wuthering Heights. Is that your take?
Oh yeah, I would recommend The Bride. I think I would sound someone out about, did they like the book Wuthering Heights, then don't see the film. Yeah, how much time do you have for Margot Robbie and Jacob Elordi, maybe, if you're not too much for, you know, I think I wouldn't recommend it. I maybe recommend it if I suddenly thought, actually, that seems like someone who's in the mood for an overblown teenage romance. Then I would recommend it. But apart from that, it just wouldn't be, I just don't think it's that good a film. And especially compared to The Bride, which, you know, I'd be listening to Flawed, but I would recommend it. I think Wuthering Heights, it could have done it. They're weird in that I think they're both flawed films, but they also show that some flawed films are still great and some flawed films are, in my opinion, just not. And these two films are really good illustrations of that.
I would say, you know, go see both of them because I think they're both interesting films. Like you said, flawed films. Both of them have a lot to offer on different levels. I think it's also a very interesting year for female directors directing really big blockbuster films that are meant for, you know, large audiences. So I think it is interesting to talk about blockbuster cinema, if you notice the female perspective in the directing, in the writing, in the production, in the interpretation. But definitely The Bride stayed with me more. I thought about, you know, images and scenes and concepts, because that's what remains, right? We haven't even talked about Penelope Cruz as this detective and her going up against the male-dominated world of inspectors in Chicago, which I thought was another interesting storyline that I guess wasn't fully realized. There's a lot thrown into the mix that was not just lost, but it was enjoyable as long as it lasted. But maybe it's about throwing in too many ingredients into a pot, and then at the end you don't quite know what to focus on anymore, and that stuff gets lost. And I think that's a problem probably of both films, and then making not quite the right decisions at the end to make a satisfying experience despite potential.
I would say, I suppose, with recommendations, that I'd say both of them are worth seeing on the big screen. I think Wuthering Heights' biggest strength belong on the big screen. I think it's a much weaker film if you were to just watch it on telly or on a tablet. You will miss what I think is what really good about the film. And I think both films, a lot is added that if you see them on the big screen, that sort of vastness befits, I think, what they're trying to be in terms of sort of big cinema. And I'd recommend, if you are wanting to see Wuthering Heights, see if you can, if it's still around, or somehow on the big screen if it gets reshowed, because that's where it does belong. And Bride is the same. There's a lot in that is just like, there are moments that if you stop and think about, you go, oh, well, that's a bit silly. But watching it on the big screen as the experience of it, I think it justifies it enough. So yeah, I'd say both big screen watches.
Well, that's good news for cinema, I guess, that there are things that you should really see on the big screen. And I think this year has proven already that, you know, cinema is very much alive, and big movies, also unique movies like these, have a chance of being released, of coming out. And I think there's a couple more coming up that I think will be interesting for us to see and discuss. So thank you, Alan, for taking the time to talk about Wuthering Heights and The Bride with me this morning. And thanks to our listeners for joining us for this damn fine espresso. See you and hear you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.